Welcome to the GRF On The Go podcast. The subject matter experts at GRF CPAs and Advisors created this podcast to offer insights on current topics, as well as new ideas and best practices that your team can apply today. This podcast was originally presented as a live webinar. CPE information provided during the podcast is no longer valid, but if you're interested in watching the video version of this session or accessing the slide deck, visit our website at grfcpa.com/events. Enjoy the episode and remember to subscribe for future content.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to thank you all for participating in today's webinar, Navigating the Complexities of Endowments. My name is Allison Conklin, and I am a senior manager in the audit department here at GRF. Today, I am also joined by Alejandro Jensen, a partner in our audit department, and Fred Longwood, a senior manager in our nonprofit tax division. The three of us have a wealth of experience and knowledge in dealing with endowments, so we have a lot of exciting content to share with you today. We are GRF CPAs and Advisors based out of Bethesda, Maryland, serving clients in the DMV area as well as nationally and internationally. Our firm serves a wide range of clients covering not-for-profits, for-profits, schools, government contractors, and others. However, our particular niche is within the not-for-profit and INGO space. We've been in operation for over 40 years as your traditional accounting firm providing audit and tax services, as well as outsourced accounting and bookkeeping services. In the last 5 to 7 years, we've spun up our accounting technology services group, helping to identify solutions for our clients to streamline their finance and accounting activities. And we've also spun up our risk and advisory services group that focuses on ERM, IT, cybersecurity, and our internal audit and fraud and forensic services group. Here is our agenda for today's webinar. We'll dive in and discuss what an endowment is and the different types of an endowment. We'll touch on UMIFA, the act that provides guidance on governing endowment expenditures. We'll then discuss the various issues we see most often with respect to auditing clients with endowments and the accounting for endowments, as well as those underwater endowments. We'll touch on the reporting requirements for endowments and the financial statement disclosures that are required. And finally, we'll hear from Fred with respect to reporting endowments on the Federal Form 990 and the key takeaways with that. And we'll also save a bit of time at the end of our presentation for questions. So please feel free to add those in the chat box as you see fit, and we'll try to answer those at the end of the presentation. Before we jump into the content, we have our first polling question. So please take a minute to answer the question that appears on your screen. Does your organization have an endowment? All right, looks like the results are in and looks like the fairly split between yes and no. So good content for this webinar here. So let's start with the basics and defining what is an endowment. I'm sure a lot of participants on this webinar know what an endowment is, but for those that may be new to the accounting profession or are dealing with an endowment for the first time, we'll define what an endowment actually is. An endowment is a fund of cash, securities, or other assets that are intended to provide income for the overall maintenance of a nonprofit organization. A lot of times, what we see with our nonprofit organizations is you have a funder that provides a nonprofit with a contribution with the intent for the organization to invest the funds in order to provide the nonprofit with long-term financial stability. And they do this by generating income from the funds in their investment portfolio. The earnings from the investments can and sometimes can't be used for general operations of the organization. So it really depends on how the endowment is set up by the donor. Now, who can establish an endowment? Typically, we see endowments are established by a donor granting funds to an organization, or an endowment can be set up by a board of directors, known as a quasi-endowment, which we'll talk about shortly. Whoever is responsible for setting up an endowment, either a donor or a board, will express the intent of the endowment, and they will typically guide on how the funds can be managed and how the earnings can be used by an organization. Usually, endowments are governed by guiding documents through a written endowment agreement signed by the donor. And sometimes we see endowment agreements that are very vague as to the intent of the earnings from the principal. So usually these require a little bit more work by the organization to properly account for the endowment and manage the funds. And what type of endowments are there out there? The Financial Accounting Standards Board has classified endowments into three main categories. You could have a perpetual endowment, a term endowment, or a quasi endowment. There are additional endowments out there, but these are the most common types that the FASB defines. So endowments with or without restrictions. Let's discuss some of the mechanics of an endowment. You can have an endowment that is either received with or without restrictions. So let's first talk about the endowments that have a restriction associated with them. These would typically either be a perpetual or a term endowment. And a perpetual endowment is a fund where the original gift amount is kept intact indefinitely, and only the income generated from the investment may be spent by the organization. Sometimes even the income earnings may be stipulated for a specific purpose by the donor. So perpetual really means that the original gift corpus cannot be spent by the organization, and the intent is to provide a perpetual stream of income to the organization year after year. Now, you could also have a term endowment, which is more on the rare side of what we see with our nonprofits that we service, but meaning the funds are designated for a certain period of time, either a fixed amount of years or until a specific event occurs. After the designated time has elapsed or that event has occurred, the principal or corpus can be expended by an organization. So in summary, these endowments can have an initial restriction on the principal or corpus, while they could also have a restriction on the use of the investment earnings, all determined by the governing use of the endowment and the donor's intent of setting up that endowment. And the third type of endowment to discuss is a quasi-endowment, which is often referred to as a board-designated endowment. This particular endowment is set up by the governing board of an organization, where they would typically designate a portion of the organization's net assets without donor restrictions to be invested. And with this endowment, the board can decide when to expend the principal balance. So meaning a quasi-endowment is not classified as a true endowment because the funds are not tied to a specific restriction from a donor, but instead merely decided by the board of directors. So let's talk a little bit about UMIFA. UMIFA, which stands for the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act, is a uniform act that provides guidance on investment decisions and endowment expenditures. And this act was designed to protect the assets of a nonprofit organization by ensuring they are managed in a prudent manner, as well as to provide financial transparency. UMIFA requires all nonprofit organizations to adopt written investment policies that comply with the minimum standards set by the act, in addition to the spending policies. And one more thing to mention on UMIFA is that individual states can decide to adopt UMIFA in its entirety or some form of the act that fits the needs of the particular state. Most states in America have fully adopted UMIFA, but there are laws in each state that also govern the management of endowments. So it's important to also review the local laws and regulations in a particular state. And UMIFA does not apply to quasi-endowments, so the board-designated endowment that is set up. Now I will hand it off to Alejandra to talk about the importance of accounting for endowments.
Thank you so much, Allison, for that overview. And I hope that you all are excited about today's webinar. We're really going to be diving into why it's important for you as, you know, if you're part of your nonprofit organization or working for a nonprofit organization, why it's important to account for these endowments appropriately. And so one of the things that comes to mind is reputational risk. And so when we come in to do an audit for our client, we really want to ensure that they're accounting and reporting these endowments appropriately. And if we find issues or discrepancies within the accounting and reporting for endowments, typically that results in some sort of either a significant deficiency or material weakness, depending on the severity of the issue that we find. And so at the end of the audit, we typically issue a management letter, often referred to as an AUC 265 letter. And so sometimes donors, they not only want to see your audited financial statements, but they also want to see your management letter to see if there were any significant findings from the auditors. And so that could potentially deter future donors from giving. And so it's really important to account for these appropriately. There's also the potential that your organization cannot comply with the restrictions as stipulated in the agreement. So it's really important for you and management to look at that agreement, make sure that any restrictions that are stipulated within the agreement, that the organization can reasonably meet those restrictions. Because again, you do not want to be in non-compliance. There could also be donor enforcement. So again, you know, depending on how involved the donor is with your organization, they could come back and really enforce the terms and conditions as stipulated in their endowment agreement. And if they find that you're not following their intent and conditions of their endowment agreement, they could, ask for a return of funds if that's included in the agreement. They could also default on future funding and so forth. And so you really want to avoid that. And then conflicts of interest can also arise when accounting for endowments. And so this could arise, for example, if a donor stipulates in the agreement or if they have any particular influence over how their money is used or invested. And that may not always necessarily aligned with your organization's investment policies and spending policies. So again, you want to make sure that you're looking closely at that agreement to make sure that you're not straying from your policies and procedures that are in place. Lastly, a lack of clarity in an agreement. So you want to make sure that if there is any lack of clarity, or sometimes we get, you know, our clients receive endowment agreements that are very lengthy and sometimes can have terms and conditions that can contradict with each other. And so it's really important that you have a second set of eyes look at it. A lot, oftentimes, if there's a lack of clarity in agreement, go back to the donor, ask them to be clear, make sure you document what their intent is. And oftentimes, you know, depending on how big the endowment is or how complicated the agreement may be or complex it may be, they may also seek out legal counsel to also take a look at that agreement. All right, so that sums up why it's important to account for these endowments. So what are some of the common issues that we know in audits when it comes to accounting and reporting for endowments? And some of the things that we see is improperly classifying endowment earnings as without donor restrictions. So again, if you have a donor restricted endowment, those investment earnings are also considered to be restricted. The other common issue that I see is improperly tracking or calculating investment earnings. And so typically when you have an endowment, let's say you have two or three endowments in total, and those endowment funds are invested or included in your overall investment portfolio. So again, it's commingled with other funds. And so really determining an appropriate allocation of those investment earnings. I have some clients where their calculations are pretty straightforward and simple, easy to follow. And I have some organizations where, you know, they make the calculations more complicated than they need to be. So just really establishing an appropriate methodology and making sure that you're consistent from year to year is important. But again, I don't think that, you know, you need to reinvent the wheel when it comes to calculating those investment earnings. Another thing that we have also seen is endowment agreements or award documentation is not retained or missing. And so this oftentimes happens and doesn't really come to light until several years later. And that is because a donor comes back or communicates with the organization and it determines, you know, oh, hey, we didn't treat this as an endowment. And so because of turnover in the accounting department or even at the management or board level, these agreements, could sometimes be missing or not retained because of your retention policies and so forth. So if it is missing, I had this happen not too long ago with a client last year where, you know, come to find out these funds that they had been keeping track of as with donor restrictions were being kept with donor restrictions, but they didn't have it classified as an endowment. And they, again, these were awarded way before 2014. And so when things like this happen, you know, you got to meet together with management and really determine what your stance is going to be and how you're going to determine. Thankfully for this client, they did have the each endowment. They knew what the balance was in each one of those. However, they did not know what the original gift or corpus was. So we went, you know, their stance was to go as far back as they could, you know, with the information that they had in hand to really come up with the breakout between those accumulated investment earnings from the corpus or your original gift amount. And then, of course, for that client, they did develop that methodology and checked in with us to make sure that we also deemed it was reasonable. So anything, if this does happen, just make sure you reach out to your auditors to make sure that they're also in agreement and find it reasonable. As far as governance, they could also, we sometimes see that the board would like to set up a donor restricted endowment that is typically not allowed. Usually if the board wants to set up an endowment, it's considered to be a board designated endowment, so considered to be without donor restrictions. However, there is an exception to this rule under FASB. And essentially what the codification says is that a board designated endowment fund could include a portion of net assets with donor restrictions. So this typically happens when a not-for-profit is unable to spend donor-restricted contributions in the near term, and then the board sometimes considers the long-term investment of these funds. So for example, let's say your organization receives a $10 million gift restricted for a particular project. Let's say it's $10 million, and you are projecting that you're only going to be able to spend down maybe 300,000 of that every year. So what the board decides is that they're going to put a portion of that as a restricted endowment to really keep those funds earning interest, dividends, and realized gains and losses to further increase that gift. But again, not typically normal. And I don't think I have seen a client do that as of yet, but it is an option out there. The other thing that we see is that the not-for-profit protects the corpus only. And so the issue with protecting the corpus or your original gift amount is the time value of money. So as time passes, if you're only protecting the corpus and spending down all of those investment earnings every year, that fund will become watered down over time. And so it would not allow for growth, and the funding for the future would be watered down. So a MIFA calls for prudent investing along with prudent spending that allows for fund preservation over time. So again, protecting the corpus only, I would stray away from doing that if you're following up MIFA. The next thing that we see is not following your organization's spending or investment policy. Now, if your organization, if your board and management decide that they want to, you know, amend their current policies, that's fine. But if they have not amended their current policies over spending and investment policies, I would stray from that. Again, that would be a non-compliance issue that would probably be caught by your auditors. And reported as such. And so really following those are really important. I will say we have seen in the past with certain organizations that are going through a, you know, how could I describe it? Like a tough time because of economic conditions, especially post-COVID, those organizations that are probably within like the arts and humanities sector and things like that, where they did have these endowment funds and they would like to spend down on those endowments. But again, you have to follow your spending policy. And if you do not follow that, again, you're not following the original intent of the donor. I have also seen where when organizations hit a tough time with their finances and are really struggling to meet operational needs, they have gone back to ask their donors to release the endowment. And so again, if that's always an option, you know, a kind of like a last save for the organization. And most of the time I have seen when organizations are struggling, the donors are so passionate about the mission of your organization that they will most likely release that perpetual restriction on that endowment. All right. So now that we've kind of gone over, you know, the importance of accounting for endowments and some of the common issues that we see, how do you appropriately record the endowment activity? And so for a donor restricted endowment, it's pretty simple. Again, you would record the original gift as with donor restrictions, so as grant or contribution revenue. You would record your investment earnings the same way as with donor restrictions, and then any appropriation of expenditures, again, following your spending policy, would transfer from restricted donor restrictions. For a board designated or quasi endowment, you would record the amount as without donor restrictions, and any related investment earnings would be recorded as without donor restrictions. So again, following the same methodology as you would with the original gift intent. And then the appropriation of expenditures, again, would happen upon board approval. And so while the board can plan and budget for future appropriations of expenditures, those appropriations are not recorded until the funds are spent or the costs are incurred. On the next slide, you'll see here some example journal entries of what it would look like if you had a donor restricted endowment gift. So this is assuming that the organization received $1 million, and that $1 million was deposited into cash. And then you would credit your contribution or grant revenue with donor restrictions. The second entry would be to transfer it from cash to investments. Sometimes you may just deposit it directly into your investment account, so you might not have that first entry, but just wanted to mention that there. And then to record the investment return or the allocated investment earnings, you would debit your investments $100,000, so assuming it was a great market for the year, and then your investment return again would be considered to be with donor restrictions. I do also want to highlight that the investment return, so that should include your interest and dividends, realized and unrealized gains and losses, net of any investment fees. So here's a diagram of what it would look like on the statement of activities, assuming that you got this $1 million endowment gift. So again, you'll see here under the with donor restrictions column, the $1 million endowment gift, and then the net investment return that was allocated to the endowment of $100,000. And then we see a reduction or a net assets that were released from donor restrictions. This is really the appropriation of those investment earnings during the year. So at the end of the year, your endowment has a balance of about $1,090,000. The next slide shows how what your statement of financial position would look like. So investments are going to include any board designated endowments, your donor restricted endowments, and then if you just have other general investments. And then below that, you'll see your net assets. So in this case, there was a board designated endowment of about $100,000. And then your with donor restrictions, which includes your donor restricted endowment, was about $1,090,000. So that's how that would look like on your statement of financial position. All right, so now let's talk about underwater endowments. And this was a hot topic a few years ago. When they changed, you know, and updated FASB with respect to disclosures and updating disclosures with respect to endowment funds or underwater endowments. And so what an underwater endowment is, it's a donor restricted endowment fund with a fair value at the reporting date that is less than either the original gift amount or the amount required to be maintained by the donor or law. So again, this is usually happens when we have those cyclical years. 2022 was a year where I want to say 80 to 90% of my clients with endowments were probably underwater because right at December, there was a huge hit to the market. And so, you know, those original gift amounts or corpus fell below because of those accumulated losses. Also see these when clients are less conservative with spending. And so they're spending more. And so when these down years occur, again, they fall underwater with respect to their endowments. So just like the accumulated investment earnings, any accumulated losses should also be included with net assets with donor restrictions. And disclosures that are required by FASB include the fair value of the fund at the end of your reporting period, the original endowment gift amount, and then the amount of your deficiency at the end of your reporting period should all be disclosed. All right, so we are going into polling question number two. Does your organization follow up MIFA? Yes or no? We'll give you a few moments to answer. All right, so it looks like the majority of you are following up MIFA. So that's good. I think the clients that I deal with that have endowments, most of them have adopted some sort of up MIFA. All right, so now we're going to head into the disclosures. So the minimum disclosures that are required by FASB and under GAAP. One being a description of the governing board's interpretation of the law or laws that underlie the not-for-profit's net asset classification of donor restricted endowment funds. This includes its interpretation of the ability to spend from any endowment funds, which leads me into the next one, which is a description of your organization's policy or policies for the appropriation of any endowment assets for expenditure. So again, this is your endowment spending policy or policies. A description of the not-for-profit's endowment investment policies, including all of the following, at your return objectives and risk parameters, how it relates to spending policies and your strategies employed. Right. All right, the next is the composition of the not-for-profit's endowment by net asset class at the end of the period in total and by type of endowment fund, showing donor-restricted endowment funds separately from board-designated endowment funds. So again, we'll show you a visible diagram of what that looks like, but essentially they want you to break out your board-designated from your donor-restricted endowments. And even within your donor restricted endowment, they also want you to break out the amount or the balance in your accumulated investment earnings, as well as your original gift amount. And then lastly, they would also like you to include a reconciliation of the beginning and ending balance of the endowment fund, including any net investment return, contributions during the year, amounts appropriated for expense, and other changes. One thing that I did want to make a mention here is the fact that some donors may have some wording in their agreement that stipulates that the organization should maintain the purchasing power of the endowment. So unless the donor provides an index, the inflation index that is usually the most relevant that I see should be used is the consumer price index. That's the most common one that I have seen. It does happen sometimes where a portion of your investment earnings are allocated and added to your original gift amount. And again, this is when the donor really doesn't want that corpus to become watered down over time because again, time value of money. All right, so the next slide is an example of a disclosure of an endowment or of the endowment fund footnote. So in this case, this is the qualitative aspect of the disclosure. So in this situation, you can see here that this organization has both a donor restricted endowment fund as well as funds that are designated by the board of directors. So meaning it's a quasi endowment. You can see below that the interpretation of the relevant law. We talked about this a few moments ago about this needing to be included as a required disclosure. And so here, this organization, for example, has interpreted MIFA as part of maintaining preservation of the original gift. Again, as part of MIFA, the organization does consider certain things, such as the duration and preservation of that fund, the purpose of the organization and the donor restricted endowment fund, any general economic conditions, and the possible effect of inflation or deflation. So again, going back to that purchasing power concept that we just talked about, the expected total return from income and appreciation of investments and investment policies of the organization. So those are all things highlighted there. Return objectives and risk parameters are also included as part of the disclosures, as well as the strategies employed for achieving objectives, and then the spending policy and how those investment objectives relate to the spending policy. So again, each organization may have a slightly different investment policy and spending policy, totally fine. It's just important that, especially if you're in the finance department or accounting department of your organization, that you're really monitoring those investment and spending policies to make sure that you're still in compliance with those. And again, I have seen recently, many clients are amending their investment and spending policy. So it is something that they are looking at with frequency as well. Even if not on an annual basis, I would say at least every 3 to 5 years, they're looking at these to make sure that they're updated accordingly. All right, so here's an example of a disclosure. So endowment funds here, assuming it's a December 31 year end, you have your without donor restriction. So this is your donor restricted endowment. And then you have your without donor restrictions, which is your board or quasi endowment. And so at the end of the year, again, this is assuming you had a positive gain in investments during the year. So again, you had that $1 million gift, which is going to be in this held in perpetuity column. And then you have the amounts available for appropriation of $90,000. And we could talk about that in a few moments. And then your board designated endowment had a balance at the end of the year of $101,000. So all in all, your total endowment funds were about $1.19 million. Below that, you'll see that we have the changes in endowment funds during the year. So again, you start out with the beginning balance of those endowment funds during the year. This is assuming that you didn't have a beginning balance or that this organization didn't have a beginning balance. And then you have contributions during the year. So again, assuming that you the board set up $100,000 board designated endowment. So you see that in the contributions line. And then the $1 million donor restricted endowment, which is going to be in this held in perpetuity column. Your net investment return, again, good year for the organization, it seemed like, as far as investment return. So there was $1,000 of the investment return that was allocated to the board designated endowment, and then $100,000 was allocated to the donor restricted endowment. And then appropriations during 2023, let's say the organization decided to spend $10,000 of those accumulated investment earnings. So that's there. And let's assume that this is also in accordance with their spending policy. So at the end of the year, you can also see here, all these, the ending balances also tie to the table above that show just the balances at the end of the year. Okay, so the other thing that I also wanted to show was an example of a disclosure of an underwater endowment. And so this is assuming that instead of having a positive gain in your investments during the year, that it was a down year as it was in 2022. And again, now that corpus or your original gift amount is now underwater. So here we're assuming that the amounts available for appropriation, these are your accumulated losses, are $10,000. And so down below, you can see here your net investment return or loss was a $10,000. So your deficiency would be $10,000 for the year because, again, you have not been able to maintain the original corpus of the endowment. So as I said earlier, with the underwater endowments, you should be disclosing the amount of the deficiency, the fair value of your endowment fund at the end of the year, as well as your original gift amount. So just making sure that you're including that. So these are all examples of disclosures of the endowments. Every client or every organization is going to be slightly different. I have some organizations that also include additional information below, kind of stating the different endowments that they have, when they were gifted, what their purpose was for. Maybe it's for a particular scholarship or something. And so it's really important that you take a look at that. But again, these are just the minimum disclosures. And if your organization feels that they want to provide the readers of the financial statements with any additional information on those endowments and how they're handled, that could also be included. Because again, they are your financial statements. All right. So we are going to head into polling question number three. Was your endowment underwater in 2022? Yes or no? So while you all are answering that, I'm going to go ahead and give some more context. So I know I said earlier that most organizations that had endowments that had December year ends in 2022, their endowments were underwater. I will say that, you know, now that we've audited those December year ends for 2023, I will say that the majority of them have rebounded and are no longer underwater. I think out of those that were underwater, maybe, I don't know, I would say like maybe like 5% of those didn't rebound fully, but almost rebounded to restore the original corpus of their endowments. All right, so looks like for most of you, you did not have an underwater endowment in 2022. So good, that's great news. Again, that just means that maybe you're investing in the right securities, and we should be using your investment advisors, or those organizations should be using your investment advisors. So good news there. All right, so I have gone over a lot of information on the endowments. I am going to go ahead and hand it over to Fred to talk about any 990 implications.
Thank you, Alejandra. So when it comes to preparing the tax return, we tax practitioners are fortunate that much of the hard work and heavy lifting has already been done for us by the audit and the accounting team. So what we need to do on the tax side is to make sure that all of the endowment disclosures that are part of the financial statements are properly picked up and recorded on the Form 990. So when you begin working on the Form 990, the first step, I think, is to walk through the checklist of required schedules, which is in part four of the Form 990. It begins on page three and continues on to page four. And this is what I like to call the choose your own adventure section of the 990, where the different answers that you provide dictate which additional schedules that you attach. And what we see here is if there is an endowment footnote or an endowment in the financial statements, the proper question to answer is number 10, whether or not the organization directly or through a related organization held endowment funds. So this question would need to be answered yes, which would then require Schedule D to be prepared and completed. And Schedule D is the attachment to the Form 990. This is page two of the Schedule D. It's there are, I think, five pages altogether. But this is the second page where the endowment footnote or the endowment disclosure is captured. This is what you would fill in. I'm going to zoom it in a little bit so that you can see part five a little better. And what I like about this, which is a little different than the presentation that Allison and Alejandra walked through on the financial statements, is it shows a current year and then a four-year look back so that you can really see 5 years worth of progress with the endowment from the very beginning. Of course, this would be the beginning balance 4 years back. The contributions for the current year that come in are recorded here on line 1B. Line 1C, these would be the investment earnings. And then what we have to do on the tax side is separate out the netted amount of earnings and expenditures, which sometimes for the financial statements, they're netted together. But for tax, we need to separate them out. And what we show are the administrative expenses, and which for purposes of this illustration are rather low considering the balance, but this is where we would separate out the expenses from the netted amount. Grants and scholarships, if made, so in the example that I have here, some portion of this $500,000 in the beginning balance was probably started as a permanent endowment for the term on the tax return is a permanent endowment. This is what Allison referred to as a perpetual endowment. So these would be endowments that are created for either a period of time or for the completion of a particular project. And for this, it would be for a scholarship program. The scholarship grants that are made would be recorded here. And it's worth mentioning that depending on who the grant recipients are and where they live, it might require the attachment of a Schedule I or a Schedule F to show the disbursements of those grants and scholarships to either individuals or organizations who received those fundings. And then expenditures for facilities on line 1E here, this would be in the case of if a quasi-endowment is set up by the board to assist with the funding of the operations of the organization, the expenditures would go there. And then you have an ending balance. So it's a pretty good little summary from year to year that shows it carrying forward for a 5-year period of time. With the way that this is constructed, this is what I think is maybe a little bit of a drawback with the way the endowment fund part five is set up, is you can't really see the numbers necessarily of what the term endowment or the permanent endowment or what a quasi endowment are. We just simply show percentages that show, well, 10% of this current year ending balance was a board designated, and then 15% was a permanent endowment, and then the remainder is the term endowment. Line three would be entered if the endowment funds are held by an outside agency or another related organization. I don't see this answered yes on too many returns. Generally, an organization accounts for and reports their own endowment on their own balance sheet. So I don't really see these questions answered yes all that often, but they're there in case that's the way that it's set up. And then finally, and I think almost most importantly, is line four, the description in part 13 for the intended use of the organization's endowment funds. And this is one of those parts of the 990 that, I'm sorry, I went past the page. It's cut off here at the bottom, unfortunately, but the What we write in here is a general description of the funds that are held, and this is taken more often than not from the endowment footnote. And this is an instance where you can provide as much or as little information as you like when it comes to the oversight and expenditure of the endowment funds. So that's an overview of the tax reporting. Final thoughts, as you can see from the presentation, there's a great deal of information and complexity with respect to endowment reporting, tracking, recording, and disclosure of endowments. But always keep in mind that your professionals here at GRF are available anytime for you to reach out and contact us throughout the year if questions come up, because we always like to get in front of issues and respond to them as they come up, rather than waiting until maybe when the audit process is underway or the tax preparation process is underway. So we're available and always happy to respond to questions. And so with that, we'll address any questions that anybody has in the audience.
Thank you, Fred. I think there's two in the chat. And so Allison, do you want to read those off?
Yes, sure. The first one that came in was, what would this look like if the corpus was underwater?
Okay, so that was included in slide 29 of the slide deck, and I believe slides will be available as soon as this webinar is over. And so we did disclose or include an example of what that disclosure would look like if the endowment was underwater there.
Great. And we also had another question come in that was, how do you appropriate the earnings of an endowment?
All right, so I see organizations do it different. Do it differently. And so I would say the most common, I would say, is to come up with an allocation. So if you know what your endowment balance was at the end of, let's say, or at the beginning of your reporting period, with respect to your total investment portfolio, I would say, you know, let's say it was 20% of your investment portfolio and your earnings for the year were $100,000. I would allocate 20% of those earnings to your endowment. So again, I would keep it simple. I have clients that might, you know, use average balances and this and that and make it complicated. I always like to go with the simple. And honestly, when I have seen, that simple method I just went over versus a complicated one that I've seen clients do, it's usually within reason and it's not a material difference.
Okay, we had another question come in. Believe. How does an endowment impact the organization's budget and operations? All right. So this question, it's a little hard to determine and budget for because you can say that the market is always unpredictable. But I would say I would advise to be on the more conservative side when budgeting for appropriations for endowments. One thing we do see oftentimes with our clients is they will have budgets and they'll include the operational revenue separately from the investment earnings and the endowment earnings. So, you know, that's an option if you want to include, you know, just the operational activities of your organization separate. And that way it's a little more clear year over year to be, you know, compare figures and everything. But always, you know, err on the side of conservative when appropriating for endowments, budgeting for appropriations.
Thank you, Allison. And I think another one came in the chat related to the 990, Fred. The question is, are non-financial assets with perpetual donor restrictions included in the endowment fund reporting on the 990? For instance, land with any permanent donor restrictions. You're on mute, Fred.
Sorry about that. I think it would depend on how it's presented for the financial statement audit. I think a lot of non-financial assets aren't necessarily included in an endowment fund because it doesn't really generate earnings that are used to provide funding for operations or a particular program. I don't know that I've ever seen it on the accounting side. Alejandra or Allison, have you seen it included property?
I have not. I know that sometimes there is a restriction on a land restriction, but it's not necessarily included within the endowment.
Right. It's not an endowment. It's not part of the endowment fund, but it might be an asset that was provided for restricted use. Like sometimes we see this maybe with gifts of art or something like that. The intention is for it to decorate the office rather than to be sold to provide funding. But I don't think of that as something that would be included in the endowment.
Thanks, Fred. All right, Allison, any other questions?
Yeah, yes, there was another question that just came through. How should endowment expenses be accounted for? So expenses incurred on the endowment, you know, holding the endowment fund.
Okay, yeah, I can answer this one. So expenses that are directly related to the endowment's management, such as the investment management fees that are usually listed out in your investment statements and administrative costs, those should be recorded in accordance with your accounting policies and netted with your investment return. And so that's how those should be accounted for. Sometimes we do see, for example, we know that, you know, accounting for these endowments takes time and it's an administrative burden on the staff. And so sometimes their time can also be allocated as an expense to be netted with that investment return.
Great. And then there are two more questions that came in. So love the questions. Thank you for these, everyone. What are the implications of spending more than the endowment earnings? So spending more than the endowment earnings can obviously deplete the fund's principal, the corpus, over time. So accountants of an organization really need to ensure that their spending is aligned with their policies and that any deficits are addressed according to the endowment spending policy and financial strategy. So this is why Alejandra mentioned this earlier. It's very critical for management to have spending policies in place and that you review those, you know, every so often. I think she mentioned every 3 to 5 years to make sure, you know, any changes that are needed are properly addressed by management because of these situations that could occur. And then the last question that came in, I believe this one is for you, Fred. Are the tax reporting requirements for endowments different for a 501c3 organization and a 501c6 organization?
The answer to that is that it depends on what type of endowment that organization has. So endowment reporting isn't unique to a C3, but the types of endowments they might have would be different because a C3 would have more charitable missions where an endowment might come in where there's a permanent or a perpetual endowment that's given to provide funding, for a scholarship fund or whatever the charitable mission is, where I think with C6s, a lot of the endowments that we see are the quasi-endowments where it might be a board-designated endowment to assist with operations of or funding of operations. So the endowment, the type of endowments, I think, are different, but all organizations with endowments are required to complete those sections of the 990 we looked at.
Great. That is all of our questions. So thank you, everyone, for participating in today's webinar. You know, we encourage you all to follow us on social media and visit our website for upcoming events and alerts. And please remember to complete that short survey that will appear automatically following this session to earn CPE credit. And thank you again, everyone, and have a lovely day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the GRF On The Go podcast. Visit our website at grfcpa.com for more information about the services we provide, the industries we serve, or to request a quote.